you let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up. Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life. It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back.
Does anybody else want to stay?
Let's ride!
Another good night. Another hot one. Well, in either case, 7:01 p.m. on the East Coast. This is Quite Frankly. I'm Frankly. It's a Thursday night. We're going to be talking some trash soon. Very soon. Tonight, I don't know if Matt's showing up. He's like the wind. He comes and goes. But we have a very special guest tonight. Good friend Rob. What's going on, Rob? Dude, this is not the first time you've been on the air. This is like maybe the second or third.
Yeah, well, first time, quite frankly.
Yes.
I was with the Zen Live show a couple times hanging out.
You were on, I remember we had, it was that night that we had Frank Civitella on.
We're talking about the economy.
Yeah.
Very knowledgeable, absolutely.
That was, I got to get him on. He hasn't been to the news studio. He's only called in.
Right.
But you've got a very special set of skills aside from knowing what time it is. I mean, we talk all the time about what's going on in the...
Great conversations, absolutely.
Dude, it's scary ones. Scary ones, but the ones that kind of get you... It's the stuff that scares you that gets you prepared as well. Mm. And I feel like that whenever we upgrade our conversations, when anybody upgrades the quality of their conversations, they actually upgrade their radar system, their sonar, anything else that, because... I would have to say that, and I was talking to Angela Nicastro about this last night, that when you look at a situation playing out, you think about when you're a kid, everybody says, I wish I was a kid again. And I said, I used to think that way until I got to about 20.
Okay.
And then I realized that when you're a kid, you sit in a room full of people. And you think everything's great because you are so ignorant to what's really going on. Mm. And as you get older and older, you realize that the small talk between grown-ups is full of body language and innuendo and sarcasm. You learn the depths of sarcasm, everything else, history, context, not taking things for what it is and actually filling in the blanks. And I feel like every time you are with friends... and you elevate your conversation to a degree that might even scare you a little bit, next time you leave the house, when everybody else is just seeing an event for what it is, you're automatically seeing a little bit deeper the next time. And I think that's what's really, really important there.
No, it's paramount to how we get along. We're social creatures, so I certainly agree with what you're saying as far as expanding horizons.
Totally, man. Totally, and I think the kung fu and the martial arts. I mean, you know it better than anybody I know, is so integral to really rounding out the way that someone walks through life.
Well, it's just a method of development. You know what I mean? So, like they say, many ways up the mountain. So there's any number of things you can do to develop yourself. It just so happens that martial arts is a good one and a total one because it develops you on many different levels.
And you've been at it for the better part of 25 years, right?
Yeah, I guess 1988. So what is that now? 28 years?
Jeez, man.
About that? Yeah.
That's...
I mean, obviously I wasn't on I was just throwing punches and kicks in the air as a little kid while my mom was playing racquetball over at Metro Fit Athletic Club.
What's your journey been like as far as the styles? Like, could you remember what led you, what eventually, in what order, led you to Fu Jiao Pai?
Well, of course. I mean, straight up, Karate Kid, Daniel-san, Mr. Miyagi. I'm into it, okay? And then there was like, I mean, they used to put those, they used to give those kung fu movies on Channel 9 on Sunday afternoons, right? Mm. And I honestly was captivated by it. Like, I could, you know, I used to, even with my friends, we would come up with like fighting styles where like, you know, because we had no context, we had no idea like what was happening. I had no idea like the period pieces, you know, and stuff is lost in translation. They're talking about my tiger style, my, you know what I mean? My crane style. So, you know, I mean, me and my friends, we come up with like crab style or frog style,
hamster style.
Yeah, it was just fun. You know what I mean? It was fun. So, but karate, straight up Karate Kid, Mr. Miyagi, all that, you know, fortune cookie philosophy stuff. I was totally into it. All those other movies, like, you know, Best of the Best and, you know, whatnot. So
yeah,
that's what got me into it. And then from there, it was like, I guess by the time I got to high school, I moved away from karate and found like this Aikido Jiu-Jitsu hybrid. It was, they called it just Aikido, but you know, we learned a lot of Jiu-Jitsu techniques. Very different than what I had learned before with karate, you know, so less linear. There was the groundwork. So that was probably like 95, 96. So, you know, MMA, you know, the UFC had just come out, you know what I mean? So that, and, you know, I had no idea how to do any of that ground stuff. So
that was 95, 96?
The UFC came out, I think, 93.
Wow.
I mean, I have the original on cassette somewhere.
I thought that this was a millennial type of thing.
No, definitely early, mid-90s.
Wow, so, okay.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely out, because I remember one guy that was like this. He came in like, I think, second or third place, but he really destroyed somebody in one of these things. So like, amongst me and my friends, like, he had the most cred.
So you had this Aikido Jiu-Jitsu type of combination.
Yeah.
When did you really concentrate on your first Kung Fu style?
Well, so then I guess what had happened is I got to college. I had to work through college. And so I maintained my training by not going to the school. I mean, I would practice at home and as much as I could. And then a friend of mine actually found this Kung Fu school. And, you know, he'd known that my background was in martial arts. He, you know, I would have had all these martial arts books. I would still practice what I had learned at home. But, you know, this was like a good about two and a half years since I had been to an actual school. And, you know, I went to go check out the class with him. It was a traditional Kung Fu. It was Kenpo and some other Kung Fu, like almost kind of like a chop suey deal. But as far as a first exposure, it was unbelievable. And then I just kind of threw myself into it. And
the thing that really gets me whenever we talk about whether we're working on a form or just any kind of instruction, there's always seems to be new systems that you reference to, systems that have like, you know, micro concentrations on joint manipulation and this and that.
Yeah, absolutely.
it's just nuts. What kind of it's another universe.
Well, yeah, I mean, technically, like Bruce Lee's thing, like the formless form, Jeet Kune Do, is the way of intercepting fist. But basically, there can be as many styles as there are people practicing, you know? So, you know, you fit things to your type of thing. I mean, I've learned, like, I'm not going to do monkey style, you know what I mean? I don't have, my abilities don't fit that type of way of movement. Crane style, you know what I mean? Long, linear stuff. I'm a little shorter and stockier in my build and in the nature of my movement. Mm. So that's not going to fit. I've checked it out, you know what I mean? Even in Fu Jiao, we have Tiger Crane form, a very famous form.
Yep.
You know, but Fu Jiao to me was, it suits my nature, suits the way I move. So I just gravitated towards that. And plus, you know, it's not fancy. I mean, you've learned a couple of the, you're just starting to be exposed to some of the stuff. You've seen the foundational forms. You know, it's very no frills, and that's very much my personality.
And at this point, it's very, very New York. You know, it's got deep, I mean, all of its, from what you described, all of its American roots are in New York City.
Straight up New York style. I mean, it came over, it was not shown in China. I mean, it has, it's, you know, those legendary stories, you know, the nameless monk, but that's because of the political stuff at the time. You know, they couldn't be named, you know, they were being persecuted. So, you know, it's a Southern style. So if you know anything about the politics at the time, you know, the South is like salt of the earth type of people. You know, the educated people, the Manchus, they came in, you know what I mean? But they, the people that are educated get to write the history and take over. So,
isn't,
you know,
that
the South
kind
of was underground, put it that way. I always make the joke. We're kind of like the Rebel Alliance in Star Wars, you know? So it came over here because it had to, and it thrived in New York City. You know, I'm very fortunate. I trained with the grandmaster of the style, who's, you know, you're talking 1950s Chinatown, New York. He even told me himself, he said, from about 1952 till 1996, if you didn't hear gunshots down here, you knew there was a problem. Something big was going on, you know?
If like, you didn't hear gunshots.
If you didn't hear the gunshots, you knew that, you know, something big was brewing. You know, I mean, Wai Hung is the grandmaster of Fu Jiao Pai's name. The stories are amazing. He actually has a book coming out, but it's all in Chinese. And I asked him, well, are we going to get it translated to English? And he's like, well, some of the stories don't have a statute of limitations, so I can't really. But it's like political intrigue, like, you know, the Taiwanese government sending people over here trying to.
There's got to be places where you can get it translated.
Well, I think you get it translated. It's just that I don't know if he wants it translated.
Well, I think that for your own knowledge's sake, I think you should definitely just find it out.
Yeah.
Are they going to publish it digitally? Because that's even easier to translate now.
Yeah, but he's such a perfectionist. One copy, we have like 8 or 9 copies are out, and I guess what he was saying is that some of the things are just not exactly right the way he wants to say it. You know, I mean, I can't speak Chinese, so I don't know Chinese, but, you know, their language, very poetic and articulate. So I guess there's a lot of subtleties to the language.
Very interesting.
You know, I mean, he talked to me a little bit about it, like, you know, the first page is the character for mind and the last page is the character for spirit. And, you know, it's kind of like the bookends of the book. And it's, the name of the book is called Tiger Looks Back, because, you know, our system is Tiger Claw, right? But at Hoi Hung Temple, where Fu Jiao Pai originates from, there's this rock. And it literally looks like a tiger turning his head and looking back. Actually, during the war, Japan stole the rock. And then after the U.S., you know, after World War II, one of the things were like, you have to take that rock and return it over there. And then the Japanese actually returned to the rock.
Wow.
Yeah, to Hoi Hung Temple. So, you know, he used the meaning of a tiger looks back, meaning like he's like the tiger reflecting back on his 50 years in the arts, but also like as reference to where it comes from.
What do you think, because we have a couple minutes left in the monologue, what do you think the reason is that you haven't seen a lot of Kung Fu style based fighters having any kind of sustained success in places like UFC?
Well, you had Kung Lee was okay. I mean, I know he was like a Sanda, you know, he had some experience, but it doesn't translate well. And, you know, the level of talent, you know, UFC is getting, for these guys are top level athletes. You know what I mean? So there's something to be said to take a guy that is already at the upper echelon physically, right? And then to train him for a specific, which is a sport. You know what I mean? I think it's kind of a cop-out when you see a lot of traditionalists, and like myself, I'm a traditionalist, you know what I mean? It's like, well, you know, we gouge your eyes out, and I can't do that in UFC, so that's why. Mm. Well, you know, you could still throw a punch, you could still throw a kick in the UFC, so personally, I have a lot of respect for what they do. I do think it's a sport, and I do think it's different. You know, it's getting a little bit WWF-ish, but
yeah, there's a lot of personality and joying now. It's being sold as entertainment.
It's entertainment. It's entertainment. But listen, I don't take anything away from those guys. I don't think that you see a lot of traditional Kung Fu guys because, you know, it takes a long time. I mean, what does Kung Fu mean? It's a skill attained by hard work over time. So you have to really train for a long time. And, you know, I guess a lot of people, they don't have that type of time. UFC, you could train martial arts. I mean, if you took a guy that was like a college free safety, right, at like a D1 school. Mm. And then we're like, okay, here's an arm lock, here's some takedown defense. You know, punches are kind of, you know, you even, I don't know, the techniques in UFC aren't that clean. I don't want to sit there and criticize, because it's easy to say where I'm sitting here, you know what I mean? I'm not in that ring. So
right.
It's very easy for me to say, oh, well, that punch is not as good. But, you know, it's an instinctual thing to throw a punch. I mean, little kids know how to throw a punch. Maybe it's not as correct form-wise, but still throwing punches, you know?
Yeah.
So
and toward the end of these matches, everybody's just flailing anyway.
I mean, you know, very rarely do you see somebody that's technically really skilled. I mean, I liked Lyoto Machida, a Brazilian guy. He fought at, like, I guess, what is that, light heavyweight, like 2-something. He was like a traditional karate guy. He did really well, you know? Mm. But he lost to some good guys that were really good, you know? And he didn't lose bad either. It's like, you know, we'll see if anybody goes undefeated in UFC. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even the best of fighters, it doesn't take much. Once you ring the doorbell, you know, the bell rings.
You know, a lot of the things that we talk about now, the one thing I never thought in my life I would ever find myself doing is Tai Chi.
Oh.
And how the grounding in Tai Chi that lends itself to the rest of the more dynamic, fierce, the ferocity of the rest of the system is amazing. And you're talking about yin and yang all the time. You're talking about perception and energy. And it really is about energy manipulation that I'm starting to pick up.
Right. I mean, well, I never wanted to do Tai Chi either. I threw myself full bore into Kung Fu. I wanted to just be, you know, as tough as I could possibly be trained as hard as I possibly could. And I was told, well, you're going to need Tai Chi. And I kind of was told that as, well, eventually you'll need it. But the next day, they were offering a class, and so I signed up. And I wasn't even given instruction for, like, the first few months because it was, like, I guess, like, bad ethics on my part just to show up and be presumptive that I could do it.
Right.
But, you know, I learned fairly quickly. I saw, like, okay, it's just the opposite side of the coin. You know, like I always say when we practice, right, what's force? How do you generate force? What's the equation? It's mass times acceleration, right?
Mm.
So your mass is pretty much a constant in that moment when you're going to be using whatever technique, you know what I mean? So your mass is there. So it's acceleration that can be the variable, right? So how do you attain speed? It's by the relaxation. The tension will cause slowness, even though you think you're stronger when you hold tense. It's actually loose. I mean, even today when we were practicing, I was like, okay, let's go through the first Fu Jiao form that we were doing.
Mm.
We weren't going through it too fast, but you could see parts that move fast, but it's because of the relaxation. You learn about the joints, where to relax and where to throw.
Well, I told you, I already applied that successfully to the way I teach pitching in Little League now. Because
yeah.
I saw, okay, all of a sudden, I'm looking for, even though I am still a ball of tension, I'm able to diagnose my problems now.
Right. Well, you could see now because you're focusing on,
yeah.
Think about that time, all the time that you practice, all you're focusing on yourself. You know what I mean? Whatever you're having for dinner or whatever problem that is going on is really not there. Like I say, Kung Fu time, like boom, hour and a half is gone. Like that. Like where did the time go?
Yes. Yeah.
You're focusing on yourself. So it leads you into a different way of thinking. And maybe that has something to do with why you don't see a lot of Kung Fu people in tournaments. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. There's Kung Fu tournaments. There's full contact tournaments. But, you know, maybe you start to think a little bit differently once you practice. You got to start to see what's important to you. I mean, competition is good because you have to face yourself. I mean, those guys are not, you know, those guys are warriors for sure.
You know, you talk about perception and thought and all that, and it all grows. It spills into the world outside of training, mm-hmm. How you perceive reality. Also, there's a lot of very gender specific stuff inside of Kung Fu as well.
Yeah.
It's not a politically correct thing to be able to say. You're a woman, you're a man, this is the type of training you do, these are the roles that you fill out.
Yeah, well, my teacher says all the time, well, this is not a democracy. You know what I mean? All this stuff that doesn't exist in Kung Fu. It's naturalness, you know what I mean? Mm. And you abide by the masculine energy is a certain energy, right? And has certain characteristics. And the feminine energy, certain characteristics, right?
And both,
we both have both. We have both. You know what I mean? And you have to learn to balance. But, you know, a male has more masculine. You know what I mean? And the female has more feminine energy.
Which does not lend itself to say that there's no strength in either or. I just think, you know, the big thing when people talk about gender, when they talk about men and women and traditional outlooks on what kind of shoes they fill, you know, and what kind of frequency that they exist on. I never look at it as obviously there's physical differences, but there's something there. There's something more demure. There's something a little bit more nurturing. There's more nurturing of an essence in a woman than there is in a man.
Right. That's the role. You know what I mean? Like, that's the inherent natural role.
But they're never lacking in strength, though, as far as strength and spirit goes.
I would say that the female is the stronger sex. When you know what I mean, because their intuition is a little bit higher, you know. I would think, and plus they give birth, man. There's something to be said about that creativity, you know, bringing forth. Definitely think women are the stronger sex.
What do you think about all of this stuff? That just triggered something in me. I hate to say the word trigger, but when you look at all of these far left feminist, third wave feminist movements that go out, especially the 100 naked women outside of the convention the other day that were shining mirrors at the arena.
I saw that. That guy is an artist. I've seen like an HBO thing with him though. Like he like does that. Like he has naked people.
Everybody takes their clothes off.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're talking. That's cool. But of course, that's what I was saying. Right. If you think that you're making a statement, you're not. It's like everybody's just like, oh, do they have pictures? Do you have pictures of this?
Yeah, right.
And then we're looking at bodies. The message is completely lost, unless you're sending it off to the choir that's preaching this stuff. But these far left organizations, especially feminist organizations, that one of the biggest pillars in their platforms is unlimited, far-reaching, whatever the mind can conceive with abortion. That is becoming, to me, and I never tackle this issue from a religious standpoint. I know you don't either.
Right.
Just more so, if you look at nature,
right,
and you just mentioned women in your eyes, and I share that belief too, being the stronger of the two,
right,
and also having the world's the future of the world being incumbent upon them being incubators for life.
Right. Well, if you look at like what you were just saying, like the feminist, I don't know, what'd you just put, third wave feminist movement?
These scratching and clawing for things to do.
Right. So like basically what that did, it kind of convinced women that like being a mother was less than. It wasn't this like great, remarkable thing that it should be and honored as such, right? So it kind of put them, and then you get to the point where, oh, abortion is, the argument is like I have the right to do what I want with my body. You know what I mean? And again, I subscribe to, I'm not a religious person. You know, my idea of the divine is a connection between me and it, and I don't need a conduit in there to tell me. So I kind of just look at things just the way it feels to me. So how does it resonate? So when you talk about abortion, it's like, I don't see how it's telling you what you can do or not with your body when, you know, you made that decision to get there. And I know, of course, there's all different types of, there's always exceptions, right? There's always all the, what if this happens, what if that happens, or whatever, but hard for me to get behind sucking a baby's brain out with a vacuum cleaner, you know?
Right.
It doesn't really resonate with me.
Yeah.
At all.
No, I get you, man. It really is one of those things where we are always looking at these contradictions being shoveled out there.
Yeah.
And by people who are claiming to just be so far ahead of the curve and civil rights, human rights minded, and then all of a sudden you look at their platform and it's all legislation by force. It's forcing people to do things. It's ending life, not starting it, not protecting it.
Right.
It's all of these things that you think would be integral to somebody who is of, you know, one with the world, who has their mind going forward and progressing forward. It doesn't make sense to me.
Me neither. I think it's, you know, it's what's your paradigm? You know what I mean? Like, so if you have a paradigm of I don't know, I don't want to say humanist, but maybe that's the word, because I know that has like a different connotation, right? The humanist movement. But I guess what I'm trying to say is all life is sacred, right? Like, if we could take that, it sounds a little cliche, but take that as a paradigm. And then you look at something like abortion, and then you're just like, well, you know, hold on a second here. You know what I mean?
Where did it come from?
Plenty of things that can be done without that.
Well, let's go on with perception a little bit more. Okay, I've got something here. Rob, you've never seen this before, which I find unbelievable because you have a knack of finding these internet threads, these conspiracies, people who are dropping hints about what's going on in the world. You're very, very in the know. I cannot believe you haven't seen this.
Well, I'm glad you're here to show it to me. I can't wait to check it out.
Well, and Matt just joined us, too. He's on the screen. What's going on, Matt?
Oh, sir.
How are you?
I'm all right.
Matt was just told last night on this show, we had a show with Angela DeCastro. Finally, what he has thought his entire life has been confirmed, that he did serve valiantly on the battlefields in both the Civil War and Vietnam.
But more so in the Civil War, I always felt like drawn to the, you know, but dude, like, dude, after she did that, dude, like, she tapped into me. Like, dude, after she finished, I felt high.
And she didn't even do anything yet, man.
I'm going to come on her show next Wednesday.
Well,
she's going
to
give me
a full
reading.
You have to give me a little backup here.
She pretty much said, like, I was responsible for a lot of deaths, right?
Yeah, but
so, hold on. Angela, she's like an intuitive?
She's a psychic.
She was saying this. I was starting to picture shit in my head. In the years 1841 and, like, 1843 popped into my head. And I was just seeing shit. I was just seeing, like, three guys standing there. Like, I don't know. It was fucking... That's why, like, if you watch a show, you'll see my fucking face. Probably saw, like, I see it. Because then she started saying exactly all my dominant personality traits that I didn't even meet her for 5 minutes.
And she was
telling
on.
It all. Yeah, Frank was there.
She doesn't do any of the, I see a man with black hair talking to me. She doesn't do any of that stuff.
So
She just unzips a person. It's amazing.
She has a show on the network?
She just started back up with us.
All right, tell me about these things.
Dude, you got to come by on Wednesday nights. Come by next Wednesday if you can make it happen.
I have class, though. I take, you know...
She goes live at 9.
Yeah, oh, I could definitely make that.
She's definitely the real deal. And even the day before that, and even that day earlier, I was listening to... Remember I told you that I was listening to the soundtrack from Glory? I was listening to it the past, like, couple days and shit. But she definitely tapped into me, and I still feel a little weird. But I'm thinking today of, like, who could she be talking about? And the only name that I could really think of is Hood.
Hood.
General Hood, yeah. He fucked up.
As long as you're not McClellan.
He fucked up on the battlefield and he lost, shit. He was responsible for losing the war.
Does she go, like, into, like, specifics as far as, like, karmic details that you have now from this past life?
No.
Just gave, like, a little...
I don't know if she knows that, but she's definitely, like, if I was, like, I was kind of, like, from when she was telling me this shit, it felt like I was kind of in a trance, like...
Mm.
It was just like...
Oh, dude, if you spend an hour with her, if she takes an entire show to focus on you, which she does, and she does willingly, it's amazing. Because she goes... Because, Rob, most of her... Actually, all of her work is dependent on what she calls starborn. So she is very, very into the celestial connection to a person and their past lives and all that, and why they do... And really connecting to people... through a little bit more, I don't want to say unconventional because none of this stuff is really conventional, but as opposed to what you normally hear coming out of intuitives and psychic mediums.
So do you give like a birth date and
no,
location?
She just starts
talking.
You know, and I kind of, as soon as she felt, when she walked in, I think that's when she started to fucking tap into me as soon as she walked into the room.
She finds the source of your pain and your holdups, and she helps you get out of your way. It's not about...
I feel great. I felt great today.
And she didn't even do anything.
I got pissed off about one thing, and I should have, about a bunch of shit. I didn't get pissed off. I didn't get fucking stressed out. But I definitely, I'm looking forward to Wednesday for
That's really interesting that she was able to, you know.
Dude, she just, right, yeah.
Does she like, talk to guides or, like,
yeah, she. There's a whole bunch of. I mean,
I definitely want to meet her. I'm so intrigued. You have no idea.
Got it.
Definitely, like, you'd really
enjoy
check this out. I have experience with this stuff, a few different times. So
what's the most? Well, we have this story. You know what? Let's try to get through this this video.
Yeah.
And then let's get to the end of that because I want to hear the most insane story you have. Because Matt has a couple of haunting stories and all that stuff. So I know that he was already receptive to whatever somebody was going to say. Mm. And she is the farthest thing from a hack. She is the greatest conversation. She's just a loving person. She connects with you, and she's chill.
I kind of like. I'm not saying that like she's old enough to be, but I kind of like a mother like.
She's very maternal.
That she gave off, yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Like.
Yeah, she's a goddess type power, but in either case,
I gotta meet her, for sure.
Here is okay. We got. do I have the right link? Yeah, Yuri Bezmenov. Now, this is 1984. I have a couple of timestamps here. Here is a part. Now, this entire thing is about how to completely destroy a country through subversion. This first thing right here, listen to what he says. What kind of situation we're looking at here with how much of a spy agency's job is really espionage? How much is put... Where are their real focus being put into? So listen to this.
Users are so crazy about James Bond type of thrillers. But in reality, the main emphasis of the KGB is not in the area of intelligence at all. According to my opinion and opinion of many defectors of my caliber, only about 15% of time, money and manpower is spent on espionage as such. The other 85% is a slow process which we call either ideological subversion or active measures, активные мероприятия in the language of the KGB, or psychological warfare. What it basically means is to change the perception of reality of every American to such an extent that despite of the abundance of information, no one is able to come to sensible conclusions in the interests of defending themselves, their families, their community, and their country.
That right there. Now, this is, we're starting off on this path. He's talking about what the whole point of the subversion is, and what happens when you get to that point. Now, I have a couple of things here. Mark 6:30. Here we go again.
And patriotism. The result, you can see. Most of the people who graduated in the 60s, dropouts or half-baked intellectuals, are now occupying the positions of power in the government, civil service, business, mass media, educational system. You are stuck with them. You cannot get rid of them. They are contaminated. They are programmed to think and react to certain stimuli in a certain pattern. You cannot change their mind, even if you expose them to authentic information, even if you prove that white is white and black is black, you still cannot change the basic perception and the logic of behavior. In other words, these people, the process of demoralization is complete and irreversible.
So the process of demoralization complete and irreversible at that point. This is... So now you're going to really enjoy watching this at its length.
Oh, definitely.
But here we go at 7:50. I think we touched this a little bit last night. This is really interesting because now we jump ahead, and Yuri goes and talks about what happens once this state of Marxism, Leninism, when it's all finally there, when all these social justice warriors and everybody who has been completely rounded up and herded in finally reach that paradise they've been sold. And this is the most startling part.
Extermination in this country?
Most of them, yes. Simply because the psychological shock when they will see in future what the beautiful society of equality and social justice means in practice, obviously they will revolt. They will be very unhappy, frustrated people. And the Marxist-Leninist regime does not tolerate these people. They will join the links of dissenters, mm-hmm. dissidents. Unlike in present United States, there will be no place for dissent in future Marxist-Leninist America. Here you can get popular like Daniel Ellsberg and filthy rich like Jane Fonda for being dissident, for criticizing your Pentagon. In future, these people will be simply squashed like cockroaches.
So, consider that. Consider that right there, and look at, just think about what we have going on. What's the first thing that comes to your mind when you hear just those first couple of sound bites?
The first thing that in my mind was when he talks about perception controlling reality, right? So it's like the observer effect, right? Like, think about how that's like the mechanics of the universe there. So our minds, when focused upon something, actually affect physical reality. I mean, that's tremendous of a thing, where it means we have tremendous power, mm-hmm. right? And if you don't, but if you give that power away, it means who's ever controlling that has tremendous power.
And that is the point where 2 + 2 = 5.
Exactly.
And that's the scariest part. And you talk about marked for extermination. Now, we already saw that shown info. They don't say it. They don't care about any of that stuff. But if we go ahead a little bit to the 10:24 mark, this is when you start seeing a little bit about the first phase in this, and it's called demoralization. Oh no, I'm sorry. That was just demoralization we talked about. But destabilization is the second. This is the second phase right here.
Normalcy and patriotism. The next stage is destabilization. This time, subverter does not care about your ideas and the patterns of your consumption. Whether you eat junk food and get fat and flabby, doesn't matter anymore. This time, and it takes only from 2 to 5 years to destabilize a nation, it's what matters is essentials. Economy, foreign relations, defense systems. And you can see it quite clearly that in some areas, in such sensitive areas as defense, an economy, the influence of Marxist-Leninist ideas in the United States is absolutely fantastic. I could never believe it 14 years ago when I landed in this part of the world that the process will go that fast. The next stage, of course, is crisis. It may take only up to 6 weeks to bring a country to the verge of crisis. You can see it in Central America now. And after crisis, with a violent change of power, structure, and economy, you have so-called the period of normalization. It may last indefinitely. Normalization is a cynical expression borrowed from Soviet propaganda. When the Soviet tanks moved into Czechoslovakia in 1968, Comrade Brezhnev said, "Now the situation in brotherly Czechoslovakia is normalized." This is what will happen in the United States if you allow all these schmucks to bring the country to crisis. To promise people all kind of goodies and the paradise on earth, to destabilize your economy, to eliminate the principle of free market competition, and to put a big brother government in Washington, D.C., with benevolent dictators like Walter Mondale, who will promise lots of things. Never mind, but this is what will happen.
So, once again, promising lots of free good stuff. You've already taken all of the air out of the tires. I mean, demoralization. Look at what's happening, man. Look at what we're look at the conversations we're having these days. The fuck are these conversations?
I know. I mean, we're almost at that crisis point that he's talking about. I mean, we're very close. We're at the tipping scale now. I mean, I could see, you know, should be an interesting election.
It should be an interesting election. What's going on in the streets right now is very, very telling. You have that. And, you know, I got to say, One of the things that really gets me, and I understand that, and I'm no prude, that's for damn sure, but there is a certain level in which the peddling of sex has been, it's starting to become abundantly obvious that this shit is just screwing with everybody's minds. Right. I had a run-in with it, too, of my own, where I had to stop and check. Dude, if you go and you check out porn sites throughout the week, there was one period in, like, the last few years where my realities were really being shifted around just because if you see enough porn and on the internet, it's unavoidable, you really come to think that, wow, everybody is just having not only just sex, but just orgies.
But that should make you think, where if this sex is such a commodity, right? Now, we talk about, bring it back home to the beginning, where we talk about, you know, Tai Chi or the balance of different energies, right? So the sexual energy is one of, it's like how we procreate as a species, right? It's this, it's pleasure, it's all these things. It's one of the most important energies there is. So, all right, you could make it a commodity. Yet, how come it's free on the internet? Shouldn't that tell you something? You know? Do you remember when you were growing up, did you have porn in the woods? Do you remember this? Did you ever have porn?
No. Every once in a while, I remember one time we all freaked out because we stumbled upon, it was actually in a wooded area. We stumbled upon a couple of pages of a porno mag that had been, like, scattered on the floor.
Yeah.
We were like, oh, shit, porn!
Yeah.
But that's nothing now.
In the back of my elementary school, there was about, I don't know, like 5 boxes of it in this old fallout shelter that we used to go and check out after school every day in 4th grade.
And my God, and now here it is. And I really do believe that's a big part. It is a huge part of it. You see all of this stuff that Yuri Bezmenov was talking about really coming to life in the Bernie Sanders campaign. We're going to see a lot of this type of stuff at the Democratic convention. The Republican convention was so fucking boring. It was so boring. I'm actually really, I said it before today, I'm really excited about the Democratic convention because at least, you know, it's going to be a circus sideshow. You're going to have all the colors of the rainbow are going to be there, and they're all going to be crying and screaming and demanding that everybody bow before them and all that shit. It's going to be great. I can't wait for the entertainment. But,
yeah, well, if you like tragedy, certainly.
Yeah, that's it. Everybody crucifying themselves. Yeah, bunch of people crucifying themselves, asking for somebody to nail down the last hand. Yeah. Hey, can somebody just get the last hand here? Yeah. So, I don't know. Here's one last thing. One story. Because, of course, he talks about how the major part about destabilization is that it takes within about 15 to 20 years to destabilize a country because it's about the time it takes to fully re-educate a new generation of students. And he goes off to talk about this one particular situation where Yuri Bezmenov was, you know, he was doing his thing. He was still in the ranks of the KGB. And he talks about this one story of how they recruit their assets. And listen to how they treat their subjects here. Okay, hold on. Listen to this one part over here. Hopefully the audio is louder.
Civil rights defenders and all the other useful idiots, they never bothered to answer me back.
Okay.
This shows what kind of integrity, what kind of honesty these people are.
Listen to this.
They're a bunch of hypocrites because they don't want to recognize a good example of racism in my country. This is the first stage of befriending a professor. You can see myself on the left with the same James Bond smile. On the right is my KGB supervisor, Comrade Leonid Mitrokhin, and in the middle, a professor of political science in Delhi University. The next stage would be to invite him to a gathering of Indo-Soviet Friendship Society. There he is, sitting next to his wife, before he is being sent to USSR for a free trip. Everything is paid by the Soviet government. He was made to believe that he is invited to USSR because he is a talented, sober-thinking intellectual. absolutely false. He is invited because he is a useful idiot, because he would agree and subscribe to most of the Soviet propaganda cliché.
Let's pause it right there, and everybody think about how well treated certain people in this country are, and think about whether or not they actually have something to offer the world, or if they are a useful idiot rabble rouser who is just going to be one of the many cogs in the system. All right, let's go back to this.
And when he is coming back to his own country, he is going for years and years to teach the beauties of Soviet socialism to newer and newer generations of his students, thus promoting the Soviet propaganda line. The KGB was even curious about this gentleman. It may look innocent. Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, a great spiritual leader, or maybe a great charlatan and crook, depending
the
on...
Maharishi? The Maharishi? They got to him too? I didn't even look this far ahead.
From which side you're looking at him. Beatles were trained at his ashram in Hardwar in India, how to meditate. Mia Farrow and other useful idiots from Hollywood visited his school, and they returned back to United States absolutely zonked out of their minds with marijuana, hashish, and crazy ideas of meditation. To meditate, in other words, to isolate oneself from the current social and political issues of your own country. To get into your own bubble, to forget about troubles of the world. Obviously, KGB was very fascinated with such a beautiful school, such a brainwashing center for stupid Americans. I was dispatched by the KGB to check what kind of VIP Americans attend this school.
That's you on the left.
Yes, right? I'm on the left.
And so, you know, this goes on for an hour and a half. It's a fantastic... I'll send you the link, Rob, so you can watch it. And we'll take call. Guys, call in. ZenLive.tv. Please, call in and let us know what the hell you think. Where do you draw the lines in modern day? And is, you know, what are we staring at here? That's the thing that really gets me here. In modern day, and you guys, and everybody that's listening at home on their own, at night, on their back porches, summer night, you're kind of getting a little conspiracy-minded. And you're listening to people who are working the levers behind the green curtain at the Wizard of Oz in the Emerald City. You're listening to the people, the men behind the curtain, who are telling you how these systems are in place. And I've heard subsequent testimony on talk radio over the last couple of days alone who talk about these exact methods are not, you know, they're not just something that the Soviets use. This is what we are using to, these are methods that are actually being turned around onto Afghan teens in Afghanistan to try to counterbalance Taliban propaganda by our side. How we try to destabilize countries through all that. I mean, look at what's going on right now in Turkey. Dude, I'm looking at Turkey today. Now, this is from Think Squad. The Ministry of Education accused... let me see here. The purge widens in the education sector. This was a couple days ago. More than 1,500 university deans have been ordered to resign, and the licenses of 21,000 teachers working at private institutions have been revoked. Since this coup... Not only has Erdogan gone after the entire educational system, but he is cleaning out the military and anybody else that is secular-minded, and people are really scared that this is going to start shifting all of this back toward an Islamist regime.
So do you think this could lead to some type of maybe an accord or alliance with Iran?
I don't know Iran, but this guy is already very cozy with ISIS because, of course, we've helped them become cozy with ISIS, because so are we.
Right. There's a someone else. Like you said, he arrested like his own people and everything. Like that, but there's someone in Philadelphia. Did you talk about that yet? That he wants to extradite from the U.S.
Gulen.
Right. Yeah.
Gulen.
Yeah.
And basically, if we're not doing it. And if we don't do it, he's going to consider us an enemy,
exactly.
Which is one thing.
Exactly. That's why I was saying before, do you think that you're going to try and leave NATO?
Not only NATO, but they're trying to get into the EU.
Right. Well, wow. Jump on a sinking ship, yeah.
I mean, you think about it, you're going to... And of course, with Turkey that also Turkey entering into the EU, that also means that the influx of migrants into Western Europe is going to be exponentially increased.
I mean, you just showed the video with the guy with from the KGB and all the tactics. So I think we should at least discuss. I mean, what role is Russia playing in this? You know, because I mean, Russia, China, Iran have an alliance, right?
Russia is not too friendly with Turkey.
Well, no, they're not right now. But if they were, if you know, if there's things changing right now, you know, I wonder
if there's something that they can, you know, my enemy's enemy is my friend.
Right. Well, just...
Here we go. Here's from The Independent. Turkey suspends European Convention on Human Rights in wake of attempted coup. Erdogan ministers reassure public Turkey is not returning to martial law. Turkey will temporarily suspend European Convention on Human Rights after announcing a state of emergency following the attempted coup. Deputy Prime Minister Numan Kurtulmus said on Thursday that Turkey would follow the example set by France when it did so following late last November's attack by ISIS militants in Paris. Turkey's state of emergency could end within 1 to 2.5 months. He identified structural and individual intelligence failures during the coup attempt and also said that the work was underway to restructure the army. About 250 people were killed and hundreds more wounded. But there's been other things going on here. The purge. Meanwhile, about 60,000 soldiers, police, judges, civil servants, and teachers have been suspended, detained, or put under investigation since the coup was defeated. You're talking about a real... He has seized any and all opportunity to really put the squeeze on anybody that has ever been... you know, on the other side of the aisle to what his views of the world is.
Right.
So, you know, it's just a really crazy time we're living in, man.
Right. I mean,
it was real interesting, Rob, how you guys are kind of like tying in all these different countries that can form an alliance against the West. And I'm kind of like just now. I think so many things are happening all at once so quickly, like right now. I'm really seeing how that could be reality.
I just wish all the bullshit with Russia would stop, especially when it comes to ISIS. They are really...
Do you think they're ISIS supporters?
No. They want to bomb off the face of the earth.
They're doing more than anybody, actually.
Are they?
Yeah, that's why I really think they're a natural ally when it comes to this stuff.
Right.
I can't stand hearing about Russia and the United States. I just fucking can't stand it.
Right. Let me ask you this, though. I've heard or read that the guy in Turkey, he's not necessarily, you know, pro-ISIS either. I think he has his issues with them as well. Do you think that doesn't matter? Is that splitting hairs?
No, listen, here's the thing. Nobody is everybody, it's such a rat's nest out there. But when it comes to the U.S. and Turkey, they have been, you can say, pro-ISIS in ways that they are anti-Assad. And,
okay.
And from the beginning, the training and the equipping and the funding of anti-Assad forces in Syria, which is in essence ISIS, it is just something that we've been engaged in the entire time, pretty much hoping that once Assad falls and the civil war starts coming to an end out there, we it would just be an easy way to just exterminate ISIS afterwards. After it, pretty much injecting a virus. You know what was that movie where they injected? They injected one virus to try to kill the other, and then hopefully they can cure the virus that they initially injected it. What the hell it is? I don't know. I know that there is an ER episode where somebody was fighting HIV or something like that, and they injected malaria to try to burn off.
Oops.
They try to burn off all the AIDS virus or HIV.
Wow. That's creative.
And then just try to treat the malaria afterwards.
Wow.
But that's exactly the kind of situation that we're seeing from a couple of countries right now. ISIS is just a conglomerate of motherfuckers that are, you know.
Did you see the last
they're trying to create their own country.
Video?
They don't have one because they're from everywhere, right?
Oh, they've created a
no, I know. They have
pretty cozy dwelling.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, no, I hear you.
Did you see the video with the beheading of the 12-year-old kid or whatever?
No.
Yeah, well, I don't recommend it, but, you know.
I don't. What did he do?
I don't have no idea.
He said he was a spy.
Okay.
This was recently?
Like 10 years old, yeah. They said he was a spy, yeah, and they beheaded him.
I mean, he's a little kid, you know.
They're animals.
Clinton's in bed with these motherfuckers. I don't give a shit.
It really is serious. It really, and that's the most serious part to think about.
Hillary Clinton is in bed with these motherfuckers.
Yeah, I think, you know, like, these world politics are way above one person. But I don't hate any human being. But if I had to hate one human on the whole planet, that I mean, she needs to be brought down.
She
just
needs
from
to be
like
brought to the gallows.
A figurehead stand. Oh,
to
absolutely.
Be taken to.
Absolutely. We could drag her body through the streets and it would be a good day
we
for
should.
America.
First, she should
and I don't
be
like to say that
feathered.
About a person, but.
She's not a person.
She might not be a person.
I don't know. I really do think that she surrendered her humanity card. I really do think.
Oh, absolutely.
I hate to say, because listen.
Yes.
I look at some people, I'm like, all right, well, this person's just been led astray. All right, this person's a simpleton. They're stupid. They're on the wrong side of everything.
Right.
But you know, there's nothing real evil there. They're just malleable simpletons.
Yeah.
She is, I don't know, man.
There's a darkness about her.
There's something
for sure.
Else. Yeah.
And the people that support her, you want to talk what this guy was saying, useful idiots. I mean, it's unreal.
She's a fucking mass murderer.
No.
I don't know, man.
Allegedly.
I don't know. No, well, there's no. I mean, listen. Alleged. There's nothing. There's nothing alleged, man.
Yeah,
you're
no,
talking
I mean,
negligence.
It's a trail of bodies.
Hey, listen. What is third degree homicide? Third degree murder. It's manslaughter. It's a murder that happened with negligence, no intent, but negligence. She has if because obviously you can't prove. It's the hardest thing in the world to prove intent. You actually have to hear them saying something or see correspondence with their signature or their handwriting that did it. But as far as negligence goes, this is a woman who has, in pretty much 16 years of public life, and any kind of positions
like
that she's
16.
Filled.
She's been around a lot longer than that, man.
But
she's been around since Nixon.
Yeah, but since she was first lady and...
Okay, but she's been around, though, man.
And afterwards, but also yeah, not holding any office of influence. You know, she can wheel and deal and tickle ball sacks behind the scenes, but she didn't get any real pull until she became a senator in New York.
Yeah.
And even then, that was just a launching platform to just go to the next level because it's all about the trophy case. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we gotta end it there because it's 7:57 and quarter life crisis is going on. Rob, yeah. any Thursday night you want to come by, man.
I appreciate having me on. Thank you very much.
No, it was really
it's
good.
Nice to talk and
so
all that stuff.
Everybody
got to see
else.
A video I haven't seen.
Totally, dude. Wow. Oh, you'll be able to watch the rest of it.
Yeah. I'm
I don't know if we're going to be live at 9:00. I'll put out a tweet because I think we might be doing something over here. We're thinking about a production schedule for us to start shooting some videos, some skits, some other stuff that we can show you on the air. So I don't know about the 9:00 show. I'll let everybody know. But enjoy Quarter Life Crisis coming up next. And Rob, thank you so much for joining us. Gypsy and Matt, thank you for sitting in. And we'll do this again. All right, guys. Be good. See you soon.